Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Now, welcome back. Michael Harding is going to be bringing his live show tour. It's based on the best-selling book, Midwinter, to the National Concert Hall this Friday. A perfect salve now for this time of the year. Michael, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Oliver. A live show, it's an amazing phrase to use for me.
Okay.
It's only me body.
If only you could...
It's only me standing there with a microphone.
But you could project yourself.
My live show.
You're which? You're live.
My live.
Michael Harding live.
I'm live in the studio. How are you?
How are you doing? Do you make New Year's resolutions, by the way? Are you one of these people?
I don't know. No, I don't. But I really... This is getting at the deep end now, Oliver. But
is it really?
It is. Instead of making resolutions, I kind of become watchful to see what opportunities would arise.
I see.
That's the trick.
Yeah.
Like I feel...
Waiting.
I feel the whole world changes when you come to the 5th of January. Okay. The whole sense of Christmas is gone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you were saying it earlier. It feels like years ago.
It
was only 2 weeks ago.
I know.
And we had all this obsession about Christmas trees and, you know, yeah. Turkeys and goose and things. And it's all over. It's like completed. Now, some people then sort of grasp the future with a kind of a clenched fist. I am going to do this, that and the other. I do the opposite. I open the hand.
Right.
In a meditative posture. And open the heart and say, what will arise for me today?
You're not going out to grab it.
No, I'm paying attention to whatever happens. And sometimes it's some surprise happens, you know. And if you're paying attention to the world, you'll find opportunities.
Makes sense.
Yeah, because I don't think that we...
Paying attention is a skill we've lost.
Yeah, we don't create our life. We think we do. You know, we think we make the big decisions in our life and we have to. But in actual fact, if you look back in your life, you realise you didn't make any of the big decisions that changed your life. No. They just happened to you.
No free will at all.
In a sense, there isn't. Only in the response you have to life. I think that's where the free will is.
Come here, I was reading on the internet. I always have to check these things to make sure it's factual. That you're a New Year's Day baby. Or where?
That is completely unfactual.
Is it?
Honest to God. I was born on the 6th of August.
What?
1953.
That's deflated me now.
Yeah.
How does your Buddhist mind look at whatever number comes up on the 6th of August?
The 6th of August I love because it's the transfiguration of Christ on the mountain.
Is it? There's a feast day.
Yeah. It's a huge feast day.
I'm back now.
And I've celebrated it in a monastery in Minsk one time. I went over to Minsk and did a retreat in a convent, actually.
Way in the back of Beyonds.
Ah, Minsk is a big city there over in Belarus.
Yeah.
You know? But the 6th of August, the Transfiguration is a huge event. Mm. And they celebrate. It's like all those stories, if you like, stories from the Gospel. Like the baby Jesus got born is a story.
Yeah.
And the Transfiguration, Jesus, he goes up the mountain and he, you know, he's kind of illuminated with great light. They're stories that sort of affirm the idea that human beings are really very special, very sacred, and that there is a wider cosmic energy around us that loves us and that we are enveloped in love no matter what the darkness. And I was listening to your woman, Jessica, that beautiful actor earlier, and when she talked about the guy going down into the cave, into the deepest recess of the cave, to paint, to create beauty, it shows you everything about what it is to be human.
It does.
That even in the darkest, darkest moments of war, of depression, or of winter, you find in your heart this sense of joy. And it doesn't have to be one particular religion. One of the things I've tried to do in the past 30 years is to tell the stories of my experience in religion.
Yeah.
So that's another way of saying, don't be taking it all absolute.
Yeah.
You know, don't be kind
bits of it out.
Yeah. And sort of having a burden of your Christian faith or your Buddhist faith or your Muslim faith, whatever. Don't be using it as a burden, but try and find the story in it that's beautiful. And the way that story becomes a kind of a metaphor that you can live every day with.
You talk about religion being your hobby, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it is a fun way to look at it rather than burdening yourself with, almost with morality, I'd have to say, because, I mean, you know, I say sometimes that I do Buddhist practice, but I mean, I drink and I'm an awful rogue. Like, how could anybody, you know, as over...
It's Cavan Buddhism.
Yeah, overweight. And I do say that my Buddhism is dozing at the fire.
Yes.
I love dozing. I really
do. You say that's meditation, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
I do, because I remember, you know, my granny, she used to doze all through Christmas. And you'd be trying to get sweets out of her pocket because she loved peppermint sweets. And she had this big apron that she'd wear. This was in Bridge Street in Cavan when you're going to visit her. And she'd have this big apron and she'd be dozing by the fire. And you just want to poke your hand in. Your hand could get in, but the minute it touched the paper on the sweet, her eyes would open.
She'd
give you a little slap. Little slap of her hand come down in your hand, you know.
She was never fully gone.
She was never fully on there. And I think that when you're dozing, you get this sort of sense that you're half awake, but there's a whole river of emotions and ideas and people, and it flows past you. And that's a perfect definition of Buddhist meditation.
You get it more during the Christmas break because you don't have to get up at a certain time. I notice you have a bit of a lie-in.
Yeah,
have severe dreams and you wake up not wondering where you sleep at all.
Yeah, and there was a thing people used to do in the 70s and 80s. I remember it. We used to hang out. Right? Hanging out was, people would say to you, like, what are you doing today? And you'd say, I'm going into town.
Mm.
Nowadays, they'd say, oh, I need to go to the post office.
That's a very distinct
purpose. And I have to meet Joe at 3 o'clock. But, like, we used to go to town for no other reason but go into town.
See who you might see.
So you had a kind of a more open opportunity might come at you.
That's like your New Year's thing, isn't it? You just wait for something to arrive.
See what happens. I think it's a really, okay, I won't say it for anybody else because I'm not a scholar, I'm not an intellectual, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a doctor. Don't ever listen to me if you think you're going to.
You're a storyteller, but we take
bits of it. I'm a storyteller. And my story in my life has been that, as they said to me in St. Patrick's College, Cavan, when I was 16, they said, Harding, you're lazy. And I have made an art of laziness.
You're far from lazy now. How many books have we been talking, these kind of semi-memoirs?
I've written a good few books, but it's a compulsion as a storyteller. It's like what I'm doing now, I'm talking. I can't stop talking. I meet somebody for lunch and I'll start talking to them. And when I love to, you know, go out to my studio, be alone, and I just type.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm talking to you. I do a podcast. I do a podcast where I do religion, but at an entertaining level.
Pondering podcast.
Yeah, but it's not pondering. It's like I love Christianity on a Monday and Tuesdays I love Buddhism. And I love all religion because I think it's imaginative.
Or do you wait for it to arise?
I do it every week on a Friday.
But the Buddhism moved to
Friday? Oh, the Buddhism.
That's for the sequel now,
I used to go to therapy when I got depressed.
Okay.
Went through a big bout of depression about 2011. Spent about 12 months sitting in a room. Couldn't come out of the room. I was so depressed.
God.
I was so exhausted. And it was terrible.
Yeah.
And since then, I really feel for people who suffer in depression.
Yeah.
And I say to people what they said to me. My loved ones around me used to say to me, it will pass. You will get out of it.
You don't believe it at the time.
I don't believe it at the time. That's the trap. But you need to say that to people because people need to believe. No matter how isolated you feel by depression, it can pass. You can get out. You can go to the shop. You can go to the supermarket. You could connect with people. You can build a life again, which I did after 2011. And in 2011, I never believed I could ever write or talk to anybody ever again.
Depression seems to be like a kind of a miserable quiet. You like the quiet, but it seems to be kind of a dead quiet.
Do you know something? It's worse than that. I think in my experience of depression, I would describe it like, you know, the way we always have a voice inside. Do you know the way there's a voice inside when you spill the cup of water?
Yeah.
There's a voice saying, yes, stupid idiot, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That voice becomes a tyrant. That voice takes over. So that you literally can't speak yourself, but you have this tormenting negative voice.
Put down the whole time.
Putting down yourself from the inside about everything. And it literally, it's like wrestling with it. And it kind of wins as a wrestler. It pins you down almost physically. And that would be my experience of depression.
Well, you look at your life now and reading bits of Midwinter, it's full of hope.
Yeah, I can't.
Even in simple places.
Yeah, because I was released in some sense from that. But, I mean, therapy did me good. And I used to go to Dublin on a Wednesday on the train between about 2012 and 2014. Every Wednesday I'd be going up to see my therapist and you'd be thinking, you know, what will I tell her this week?
Yeah.
And you'd be having to think about something in your childhood. You know, because sure, if you had nothing to tell her, like you're wasting
like
your money. Well, you were wasting. I'm a coffin man. I was thinking €60 an hour, like, you know, I better get the juice out of it, right? So, but that was Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, on Tuesdays, I'm a Buddhist. Because it seemed to me that Buddhist practice or Christian practice was fundamentally different from psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. Psychotherapy was, in some sense, trying to deconstruct yourself and see where the wires were kind of crossed or flawed or whatever. Whereas the prayer, to me, is the word that crosses all religious barriers. Right? Prayer is what they do as Buddhists. Prayer is what they do as Jews or Muslims or Christians.
Yeah.
So that kind of seems like relying not on yourself, not analysing yourself, but kind of developing a relationship with the world around you. Feeling that the trees around you are not just inanimate objects standing there, but that they're embracing you. And when you start to feel that the trees are embracing you, or the mountain embraces you, or the people around you embrace you, you're going to be pulled out of that depression. And that, to me, is prayer.
It's kind of Eastern religion as well, isn't it? That we're part of a community, a wider
Absolutely,
thing rather
yeah.
than ourselves.
Yeah.
Are we any good at Buddhists being Buddhists in Ireland? Because the Western version is often self-betterment. It's like psychology, isn't it?
I think we're very good at performance, if you think about Jesse earlier, right?
Yeah.
We're very good at a lot of things. And probably it's a danger to get too hubristic. You know, we do that as Irish as well. We think we're absolutely wonderful at everything, yeah. right?
But based on one person.
Yeah.
Rory McIlroy, Jesse Buckley, now we're wonderful.
I think that we do have in Ireland an amazing facility for storytelling and an amazing facility for being open to the world around us. And those are two profound pillars of all faith. To create your life in story rather than in psychology. To create your life in story and in romantic story rather than in, let's say, logic of career.
Mm.
So you say to somebody, who am I? And they say, well, I'm this person and I'm an engineer and I achieve this and I achieve that. Like a CV.
Yeah.
And somebody else, you say, who are you? And they say, well, I met this woman in 1972 and I fell in love and that's who I am. Do you know what I mean?
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Like who you say to yourself is sometimes a story and sometimes it's romantic and it's beautiful. And I think the Irish do that a lot.
That's the beloved you're talking about.
For me, it's the beloved. Yeah, for a lot of people, it is their own beloved too.
She brings the sunlight, the kiss in the morning.
She does. Yeah. She runs through the garden getting flowers and presents them to me. Yeah.
Because you love her now, mooch around the dark house at this time of the year.
I just think it's extraordinary. That, like, there's a big moon, as everybody knows, the past three nights, right?
Unbelievable.
This was unbelievable before dawn. And what's wonderful, again, about winter is you don't have to get up at 4 a.m. to see the dawn. You can lie in bed till 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
do you see what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to do it around June, July.
That's right.
but if you actually pay
attention to the land outside and the world outside, in the morning, in winter, it's magnificent.
It's amazing at the minute.
Yeah.
When we think about pretty midwinter or pretty winters, it is frost and nice, bright, clear mornings, isn't it? We don't usually get what we're having at the minute. It's usually wet, a bit mild for the time of year that we were used to growing up.
This reminds me of Warsaw.
Oh, yeah.
I used to go about 10 years ago. I used to go every winter to Warsaw and I would spend 6 weeks and finish the first draft of a book. But I used to love Warsaw because of it was like this. It was always -2 or -3.
Freezing.
And it was freezing. And you could walk in it and it was so crisp yeah. and dry. Yeah. And then you could go into some cafe and get a soup, you know, a tomato soup. Oh, God almighty.
Sounds
I
lovely.
Loved it, yeah.
And how long did you spend when you went?
I'd go 6 weeks, 4 weeks.
No, that was a good little stretch,
just to
wasn't
do a draft.
This time of the year.
Yeah. Rent an Airbnb, very cheap. Ryanair.
And it was an important place for you, Poland, wasn't it? You have friends there.
Yeah, we developed friends.
Cathy's
a sculptor, and she spent a year at the art college there doing exploring icons and, you know, developed really a beautiful kind of relationship with making icons in the year that she was there.
Yeah.
And so through that, we started meeting people who are, you know, in the artistic world, painters and sculptors and stuff like that. And they would all say at the time, by the way, and that's 10 years ago, and they'd all say, we have to watch Putin.
We'd be saying,
no, you're going really conservative here.
You have to stay friendly.
You don't see where we're going. It's all modern and nice now. It's going to be all changed. And now they say, I told you so. You watch a Putin.
The nice thing about this time of the year is you get the sunset early as well.
Yeah.
Even though we don't like to see the dark encroaching, maybe, but
yeah.
You get spectacular sunsets at the minute.
You get spectacular sunsets, but it's also like you have this big long night. And again, I remember my mother used to say, I dread the long nights.
Yeah.
And that's because she was lonely. And I think that is tough on people. You know, if they're enclosed in the house for too long in the winter, in the evenings. Mm. And I can only say that for me, I love it because the long evening allows me to rest. It allows me to tell stories. It allows me to even read books. As your man said again, your previous guest, you know, reading is an amazing way to develop empathy.
Yeah.
It's just crazy good, you know.
It's Tim, yeah.
You pick up one book and you read a little bit of it. And you just feel a different person because you've been in somebody else's mind.
100%.
And all that, I think, you can do in winter. All you need is a sofa, a warm whiskey, and you're a book.
That's what I want to do right now, Michael.
Yeah.
With you, obviously, sharing it with people.
Well,
it's not about the individual
no.
pleasure, is it? It's yeah. the community mehel.
It's about everybody being one. Yeah.
I love what you say about giving the winter gives you permission. You have to give yourself permission to kind of, the armchair comes calling, don't punish yourself, feel guilty about it.
That's the problem. We're giving ourselves too much punishment
yeah.
about relaxing. So it's like people say, I'm doing this to relax. Right? I'm going to do Tai Chi to relax. I'm going to do line dancing to relax. I'm going to do all these things to relax. And it's like, clenched fist, you're going to make an effort to relax.
And achieve a certain and level of relaxation.
They do it at meditation. They do it at meditation. They actually, I went to a fellow one time about 2 years ago in England. He was an Indian guy. And he said, when you think you are meditating and when you think you are doing it very well, one thing's certain, you're not meditating. Right? So if you kind of make an effort to do it,
yeah, yeah,
you're not doing it.
That's what he means.
And that's a kind of a circular problem. But the answer is, how do you kind of unlock that? It's like loosening the grip of your hand. You can do it physically. And the way to do it is to realise that when you're relaxing, you're doing nothing. You don't take up something else to relax.
Mm-hmm.
If you're wanting to relax, stop who you are. Stop. Do nothing for 20 minutes. Absolutely nothing. Don't even change your posture. You know, don't even start fussing about, am I sitting right
yeah.
in the lotus position?
Right?
Am I? No, just be aware of yourself and be still and realize the mystery to be alive is the whole trick. It's the whole trick of happiness, that we're alive.
Mm-hmm.
We are blessed. Shakespeare is no longer with us. In that way,
yeah.
So many people have passed and gone.
Well, how
and we're here for this moment.
The dishwasher still has to be emptied and the bins have to be sorted, you know.
No.
The humdrum I noticed
that if you ignore the dishwasher, it empties mysteriously on its own. It does. It's quite
the
amazing.
Cat that's doing it.
Quite amazing. Yeah.
You must be good at switching off all the noise then of the universe around you.
I think I am. There's very little noise in Erigna, though. Do you know?
It'll find you, all this stuff.
It's quiet.
About the badness in the world and people who are angry, people who want you to be angry.
Yeah. There's. I suppose I'm, like every storyteller, I avoid politics. Avoid all that. Not because you've been evasive about it, but you will find a deeper meaning in stories. You'll find a deeper joy, I think, in things like faith than you will in argument. And I know it, again, only from experience, because when I was a young fella, I couldn't say the word on radio, but it starts with a B and ends with an X. I was one of those.
Oh, yeah, God.
I'd go to the dinner table looking for a row.
Would you?
Oh, yeah. I used to love a good argument about whatever would be the contemporary political issue of the day. And if we got enraged at the table, I think that was wonderful.
Easy to start the row, hard to end it.
Yeah. And gradually you realise you're losing friends everywhere.
I know you say you're a storytelling, don't give out advice. Isn't that about someone has a question. What would Michael say to give meaning and sustenance to someone who has reached mid-40s, is without relationship or child, and feels she has missed out on it all? Thank you.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean,
think you kind of answer it, though, don't you? Because it's being alive.
Being alive.
You just need someone to love, something to do, someone to look forward to. Someone you love could be yourself.
Well, it could be a pet. I mean, it could be
a pet.
I know people who really are engaged in a deeply loving way with both horses, dogs and cats as pets, as animals around. They're really part of...
Oh, yeah.
And when you encounter an animal... I had a cat, by the way, who died about 6 months ago. I had that cat for nearly 15 years and I wept.
I'd say you did.
I'm a hard man, but I really wept. I was so sad.
We've read about your cat.
Have we? Have I spoken about my cat?
About the cat. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sometimes the cat joins for meditation. I wish we could talk more, but we have to go and do ads and things like that. But for that person, I'll quote you, "A moment of gratefulness opens to me as I consider I might indeed be blessed with another year, another cycle, another summer to sit beneath the roses I planted long ago."
That's as much as you can ask for. Yeah.
"An Evening with Michael Harding, National Concert Hall, Friday, the 9th of January, that's this Friday. The podcast is online as well. Thank you, Michael, and a Happy New Year to you."
And a Happy New Year to you, Oliver.